Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey guys, welcome back to the OMG MotoGP podcast. We are fresh from the second race of the 2024 championship at the Algarve International Circuit, or the roller coaster in Portimao. I'm Renita Vermeulen. Make sure you like and subscribe to OMG wherever you get your podcast from. And if you'd like to support us further, please do check out our Patreon. That link is below. And alongside me, as always, is a former Grand Prix rider and British champion, Keith Ewan. Keith, let's get straight into it. Portimao.
Well, we had Qatar, which was a little bit boring, and Portimao was everything but boring. No doubt about it. I mean, I was looking forward to it right away from the start. I'm sure everyone else was. A great racetrack. Hardly any. It's uphill, down dale, as they say, and a fantastic racetrack. The big problem is, of course, is whether there was going to be too many coming togethers. There were one or two significant ones, which we'll cover a bit later on. But from a racing point of view, Moto3, Moto2, MotoGP, absolutely fantastic. Great, great weekend. Spoil a little bit, I think, at the beginning, as far as prep was concerned. Bearing in mind, there's been no test there. This year is that the rain on Friday absolutely washed all the sand and gravel. It was like porridge they were having to ride through on Friday. The Moto3 session, the first Moto3 session, was a disaster on Friday. But I have to say, Portimao, they do a great job, got great staff at Portimao, and they got it cleaned up fairly well. And the thing with that is, of course, the track has an evolution all through the weekend. It never kind of catches up. So by the time you get to Sunday, you still don't really know what exactly you're going to have, particularly Moto3 and Moto2, because they're on Pirellis and they're still working out the parameters of where they want to be with the tyres. Brand new tyre manufacturer this year for Moto3 and Moto2, of course, if you haven't been keeping up to date with that. Dunlops are gone now, and the old bowling ball that used to be Dunlop, you know, mega reliable every single racetrack. Now we've got Pirelli, softer in construction and giving you a completely different feel to everything. So therefore, each and every team is trying to work out exactly what's working for their setup. So bringing a bit of rain and a slippy track to start with as well, that's just what they didn't want. And that then moves on through to MotoGP, of course, and the Michelins that MotoGP run. They still, although they have data, still have to work their way through that program. Not easy being a race team nowadays. There's not enough time to get everything covered, particularly if you haven't tested there. Like I said, 2024 bikes are out. They seem to be working really good this weekend. Right from the get-go, that was a question mark, whether the data that they had for them would be perfect for starting at Portimao, and it was. I think from my perspective, there's been rumblings for some time about the aero devices, of course, and particularly the ride height adjusters and so on and so forth. And over the course of the weekend, jumping forward a bit, because I know you probably already have this in your head, Renita, is the mistake that Marc Marquez made when he engaged, you know, the ride height adjuster, the rear ride height adjuster, too early and crashed. And then we had in the sprint race, Bastianini, you could see him trying to force the front end of the bike down. If you're not watching this on YouTube, you won't be able to see me rocking in my chair. They're trying to force the thing down to get it engaged. And he just, whether he pressed the release button and he just didn't have the momentum in the bike to get the thing, push the forks all the way down. It has to be something the rider does. It can't be done electrically or electronically. So he could not get it down. So he's starting the sprint race from pole, pole position, just wasn't good enough. And it goes to show you the difference between having the right eye adjuster in the right place or not having one at all. A lot of people are arguing and pushing, and I think at 2027 we are going to be losing that particular contraption completely, particularly with the underscore this weekend of Bastianini mucking up pole position, Marquez crashing because he engaged it too soon. I'm actually surprised, Renita, that we haven't seen more of that in the course of these right eye adjusters. I thought we might have seen more mistakes made that could cause a catastrophe.
No, you're exactly right. Exactly right with that, because obviously the rider is manually controlling these throughout the track session or the race, right? So how are they getting it so right all the time? It just shows that the level of concentration, or I guess the pinpoint where they are talking with their crew chief, the data technicians, okay, this is exactly where it needs to go in to help get, you know, the right drive that you need out of the turn or whatever it is. But you're right, it's the first time we're seeing these mistakes happen from Marquez. And then that happening on the start line.
It's the first time we're seeing them. And that might be key, because it's not to say that they haven't happened many times already that we haven't seen or haven't had the report from, where a rider has perhaps engaged it a bit early, or it hasn't disengaged when it should have disengaged, and so on. But I for one, will be glad to see the back of right eye adjustment. So, I mean, they've got no positive use whatsoever for a motorcycle anywhere else other than on a racetrack or a drag strip. That's it, effectively. Aero, you can understand, might have a function later on in life in a road type situation or a progression regarding that. Interesting today, we're recording on Monday, of course, the Monday after the weekend. Today is test day, the first of the massive concessions days for Yamaha. And again, it's critical on several fronts today. And it's hissing down with rain in Portugal. It's so you just don't get the luck, do they, Yamaha, sometimes? And I mean, it's all of the riders are on site and they've got a lot to test, particularly in the aero department. There's a big disparity between Rins and Quartararo, what they're looking for. Quartararo wouldn't be baited into giving us a clue what they were actually going to be testing, but he said they've got a lot of stuff to test. And it seems that Rins is looking for something different from what Quartararo is looking for, which makes it even harder for Yamaha on a test day, and particularly if half the day is going to be used up with watching the rain come down. So you've got to feel a bit for Yamaha today. It's an important day because Quartararo will pretty soon be looking to see what other options there are for him to sign into the future. And I think that these test days are going to be critical to keeping him on a Yamaha or him off somewhere else. And if you believe what I just said, then bad luck. Because his management behind the scenes are going to be looking at everywhere else anyway, whatever happens in the test day. So you can be fairly sure that whatever anybody says was all hinges on the test. It don't. It depends on where the management have got his name on the desk of one or two other teams, of course. Although, having said that, where would he go? Audiguer. Now, there's a good one. Firmin Audiguer, the sensational Moto 2. You see, you know how Harry feels now, Renita. You're not going to get a woman. I do apologise.
No, it's great. Keep going.
Signed for Ducati, which is, you know, they have really, really done. Yeah, we knew that they'd signed. It was a great signing. He's put a fire under anybody that's at Ducati already as a rider. But we now know that he's going to Pramac. And, of course, with the results this weekend, Pramac being a winner again, in the hands of good old Jorge Martin, then Pramac are showing Audiguer that might not be quite the second-rate show that he may or may not think it is. I love Pramac. The great. They know how to party.
That's all that matters, right? Oh, Jorge had such a great weekend, didn't he? He did really well in the sprint, got first in the main Grand Prix. Like, he's already off to a really good start for his 2024 season, fighting for the title. Pecco Bagnaia, on the other hand, not the best weekend, not the best start to his championship pursuit, we say. He mentioned in one in the sprint when he had that weird error as he came off into the corner that the rear is coming up a lot more and he's losing that contact, and he goes, I didn't even think about it. So that shows you where his mindset's at, is he's not necessarily all there.
Well, now, I think Portimao is one of those racetracks where it can catch you out like that, even when you're Pecco Bagnaia. I mean, it's a situation. And also the fact that you can't recover the way that you might have done in the past. You know, like everything is so tight and close. If you suddenly give them a few yards ahead of you, the chances are you're not going to be able to make it back unless something's happening tire-wise where the tires are going off. It's the other side of things that I don't like so much is tire management is a pain. Jorge Martin leads the championship from Brad Binder. Yeah, go on, Brad. He's an OMG MotoGP man. And then we have Bastianini and Bagnaia. Bastianini, you know, that's your top four at the moment. I suppose we've got to get onto the subject, haven't we, early in this. The Bagnaia Marquez thing.
Yes, I want to hear your thoughts on this.
Portimao is push and shove. There's no doubt in it. And Marc Marquez is a man that likes to push and shove. Although on this occasion, you know, it was a situation where the pass had been made, but he'd run it a little wide. Bagnaia saw a legitimate opportunity to cut back and get underneath him, perfectly legit. But of course, you also know, Bagnaia will have known, that Marquez is going to be closing it down. So the two met in the middle. It was deemed by the stewards a racing incident, which I agree with. But if I've said in the past, if you could apportion percentages, I would have apportioned a bit more against Bagnaia than Marquez in this occasion. But at the end of the day, neither will be happy with the outcome. Neither will be happy with each other. But both will recognise the fact that they both wanted the same bit of tarmac at the same time and it wasn't coming their way. And it also depends. I mean, they know better than anybody. The rider always knows better than any of us looking in from afar. Doesn't matter how many camera angles you got on it, they know exactly how much the tyres were moving, how much control they had at the time, which is, in Bagnaia's case, he couldn't have done anything. If he tried to turn it any harder or done anything else with it, he was going to lose the front, wipe out Marquez anyway. So it didn't really matter. Once he was in the position he was in, he was committed, nothing else you can do, and there was the collision. I don't know what else. I can't imagine. We've seen it time after time after time, this situation where the cutback and suddenly riders come back to the apex, which is where Marquez was coming as Bagnaia was trying to get underneath him. Nothing really you can do about that. It's cost Bagnaia dearly at the moment, I think. So if it was 60% his fault and 40% Marquez's fault, Bagnaia has also paid more heavily, I would suggest, because those points are crucial at this time of the year. The lucky thing was nobody got hurt. Talking of getting hurt, again, he didn't get hurt particularly, but Franco Morbidelli's luck continues, doesn't it, really, with another off over the weekend. You've got to start feeling very, very sympathetic towards Franco Morbidelli. It was another racetrack that he could do particularly well at, and again, he's not shone. Hopefully today will brighten that up for him, perhaps.
Today? He's not testing today?
Oh, is he not? Oh, sorry. Oh, well, there you go.
he's with Pramac. He's with your favourite team.
I was going to say, is it a private test? Oh, it's a private test, isn't it?
It's a private test for Yamaha, yeah.
It's a private Yamaha test. That's why we've got no spies. I've been ringing around a couple of people this morning trying to get somebody. They say, no, we're not allowed in today. And that's the reason why. It's a private Yamaha test. Oh, well.
But yes, no.
My mistake, shooting.
But no, Franco is definitely not having the starts of the 24th season. And I kind of hoped for him as well that this track he would have done a little bit better because it was that track where he had that big crash in the preseason, right? It's where that incident happened. It's where all those setbacks come from. If he could overcome that, I think mentally that would have helped. But now he's got that extra setback, two races in. Now he's got 3 weeks, though, to rest, recover, relax before they go to Coda. Maybe it's just the time that he needs to stop, digest everything, and then go. But I do really feel for him, hey.
The downside of that, Renita, is you've got too much time to think about it. You want to get back on a motorbike. You know, that can be the other side. If you've not got injury to recover from, sitting back at doing your training and all the rest of it, you know, he will be doing plenty of that. I mean, fitness is a major thing. I worried a bit about Maverick Viñales at the weekend because he had gastroenteritis, which, is debilitating to say the least.
Is it?
You know, it was fairly lucky that he wasn't particularly warm over there, and dehydration was a thing that is a big problem in hot countries. Portugal wasn't particularly, well, it was warm, but it wasn't scorching hot like in Qatar, for instance. And I suppose while we're on the subject of Maverick, I mean, he was riding, as we know, he can, absolutely outstandingly, brilliantly. And that, I've got to say, that bike looks perfect everywhere. It looks really, really very strong out of the fast stuff. In that last sector to Portimao, it looked really, really very good indeed. And that the win on Saturday was, well, he looked like you got fighting the dog. Maverick was this good old Top Gun again, and he looked like it. And we were all looking forward to Sunday. And, yeah, would he have won? I don't think so in the end. I mean, last lap he was too far adrift of Martin. But a gearbox failure. Now, they're the kind of failures that really sap confidence, because you can't do anything about a gearbox failure. You know, you can grab the clutch if you've got an engine failure. You can negate the lockup with the clutch. But when you've got a gearbox failure, that's a direct drive into the rear wheel. So you're a passenger. If that decides to lock up and go pop, that is a problem. So the Aprilia techs are going to be looking very, very, you know, deeply into that. And again, you always wonder whether there's been any test history of anything to do with that. And that can be a little bit of a confidence sapper. So I'm hoping that it's a one-off, whatever it might have been internally that just popped, and they can get straight to the bottom of it. Because if you get one or two of those in a line, then the likes of Maverick's, brain is that it will knock the edge off of him, in my view, just at the point where he's come back to being a real threat. And we're moving to tracks that are going to suit him as well. And the bike, obviously, although the bike looks pretty good just about everywhere. So I hope that gearbox problem is a one-off. They'll come straight to the bottom of it, and we won't be seeing that again, because it's frightening when the gearbox locks.
Yeah, no, definitely. You could tell that when it happened, he was, what's happening, what's going on? You could see him physically jumping up and down, trying to get that gear into place, right? And the commentators were like, is he doing an elation celebrating early? No, clearly not. You could tell something was wrong with that bike and the confusion. But what I did want to say about Maverick, what I noticed is he was on the defense that whole race and he was holding it. And that's one thing I was like, yes, this is awesome. This is what we want to see. He kept applying that pressure to the way where he could, right? Like you said, he was super fast in that final sector, but he was holding off Fascinini as much as he could and holding that defense. And you said it, we're going to see that old Maverick back. If that doesn't knock his confidence with the gearbox issue, I think we'll see Maverick back on top very, very soon.
Agreed. I don't think there's anybody that's going to disagree with you on that one. Bastianini back on the scene as well. That's good to see, because
he's
basically fighting for his seat at the end of the day. It's going to be something that, with the Audiger thing that we mentioned earlier, Audiger now is back there he's loaded in the gun, isn't he?
Yeah.
End up getting shot because they've only got 8 bikes out there at the end of the day. Well, only got 8 bikes out there, Ducati. Audiger, pretty much confirmed at Pramac. So that's a seat gone.
Mm-hmm.
But Bastianini's seat is always going to be one that is a bit of a concern. You would expect Jorge Martin to move up from Pramac to perhaps Bastianini's seat. It was always between those two anyway, back in the day. Bastianini came out on top, but he's now got to, he's got to justify that. And you get the feeling that Ducati, they just want to rule the roost everywhere. And at the moment, it's the independent team that's doing it with good old Jorge Martin. So he's doing his stock value, as a certain Neil Hodgson would say, a whole load of good.
I think what I really liked about Andrea Bastianini this weekend was he did set the fastest lap time during the race. I thought, okay, cool. He is trying to make his mark here. He's definitely trying to fight to keep his seat. And you can see that, considering last year at Portimao was where he had that start of the terrible season. Obviously, it was the season opener, but he crashed out, didn't he? Or he didn't even make the race. That's when he did the shoulder blade, wasn't it? So for him to come back, finish on the podium, finish strong, set that fastest lap time, perfect. We're going to see a good Enea, I feel like, from now on.
Good to see all of them out on the racetrack as well, though, at the moment.
Just?
Everyone's there racing. It's good to see a full grid. Last year, we didn't have that.
Yeah.
At all.
From round one.
From round one. So it's... we're in for a cracking season. We knew that all along. But of course, I think that what it's doing is the realization of this, entirely massively long season is slowly going to start sinking in. I think that there's lots of moves behind the scenes to make sure personnel are right, everything is in order to try and make this work for each and every team, and every scenario is covered. But with the season as long as it is, you know it's going to be attritional. It's going to be a war of attrition this year as much as anything. And he who stays fit every single round and scores good points at every single round, you know, sprint race, half points, yeah, it's not the big prize, but it is going to make the difference at the end of the year in who is going to be world champion.
Exactly. And I think who, in my opinion, is going to test the most is going to be Pedro Acosta, because he is the rookie this year. He's going to experience the sprints. He's going to have to learn the tire management, the bikes, the teams, the ins and outs, everything that everybody else on the grid has had that full year experience already, or and previously, but with the sprints last year. But in saying that, Pedro, he rode pretty good this weekend.
Yeah, he did. It was he's just spectacular to watch. I mean, yeah. It's funny. I was watching somebody mentioned, I can't remember what platform it was on now, but yeah, but there have been one or two others that have done as good as him, if not better than him, you know, mentioning the likes of Marc Márquez and all the rest of it. Give us a break. This kid's just come in and, you know, second Grand Prix and he's there or thereabouts. I mean, just spectacular. And the racing nowadays is so tight, within thousands of a second between each and every one of them, you know, and the way that he goes about his business, he's got that little bit of magic about him. I mean, I've said it times before, you watch some riders, yeah, they're brilliant riders, but some just have some magic. They're just able to, just that little nuance, that little touch that he has with a motorbike, and the understanding of his placement on the track and his anticipation of everyone around him and where they are, is just brilliant. It is just, you know, belies his years, belies his experience. And then when you talk with him, the guy's just a killer. He just cracks me up all the time. And he's good for the sport. He's very good for the sport. I would have money on him. I mean, could he get any better than he is at the moment? Is this kind of beginner's luck? Is he just feeling his way at the early Grand Prix, or is he going to improve still further? If he does, you know, some of the established riders are going to find themselves in trouble.
Oh, definitely. And like you said, he is good for the sport. I love the fact that he powered through the pack from the get-go. You know, a lot of them are thinking about the tire conservation and whatnot, as they should and what is required from them. And you could definitely tell that Pedro was thinking that, but he was also there trying to fight. He wants to win, and you could see that. Some of those overtakes that he did on Pecco were a bit like, oh my God, is he going to keep it upright? But he did, and because like you said, he's meticulous. He knows what he's doing. He understands everything that's going on around him, but he wants to win. So there's that drive there, right? And I'm so interested to see, as the season progresses, all these little takes, overtakes, all these bits and bobs that we're going to see from Pedro Acosta.
When you've got a rookie that's interfering with the world champion in the way that he did, that usually causes a little bit of grief. It's not something that a world champion... It's almost annoying that you've got this kid that's just in, and he's buzzing all over you and riding around you and trying to get underneath you. And I think Pecco, that might well have been, you know, the bit of destabilization that was coming his way. He knew he was going to have to fight harder than perhaps he really, really wanted to. I mean, again, you got the likes of Bastianini. We talked about him a moment ago. He's good late race grip. He always seems to have that bit of, he manages his motorbike so well. These are things that we can't see. But they can feel. You know, riders have such a lovely touch. I mean, electronics. You know, Alex Rins was talking about that he wants to alter a little bit of his electronics, perhaps. He likes the bike a bit freer, a bit old school, if you like, in that he wants to control the motorcycle through his right hand rather than have electronics banging into it and taking away some of that autonomy, if you like, that a rider has. And I think it's important. And each and every rider has that different way of riding a motorbike and relies on different particular things that are available to him, the tools in the locker, if you like. And this is where Acosta has been. He's got that kind of, dare I say it, that kind of stonerish feel about him. You know, he's got that kind of lovely reflex. I hope that is enhanced over the next few rounds. I mean, and if it is, then we're going to have a spectacular upset as we move through this year.
Definitely. And you're not the first person I've heard say that. As somebody else mentioned, he's got a bit of Stoner, he's got a bit of Jorge Lorenzo, he's got a bit of Norik Abe, plus he's got the whole Pedro Costa feel onto it. So it's a whole mixture and he's blending everything together. And we can clearly see that on the track. But I feel like that's enough about the European. Oh, no, sorry. You want to say something?
No. I was just, as you were speaking, I was looking at my notes. I'm terribly rude.
No.
Seven, the movie did on Binder, I wrote down brilliant. Oh. And I don't often do that.
It then, was, though. It was very good.
And having done with Brad Binder, who's not an easy man to pass because he's bloody good on the brakes. Lap 8 on Marc Márquez for fifth place. But brilliant. Obviously, Binder moved up. And then Pecco for fourth place, which I wrote alongside that, better than brilliant, spectacular. This old school old boy was writing down words like spectacular on Acosta's passes.
But they were, that's
go.
The thing.
Okay, he inherited third after the Aprilia demise, unfortunately, but he still deserved that third place, his first podium. Second ever Grand Prix on the podium.
Yeah, I mean, insane.
Go on, having interrupted you rudely again.
No, it's all good. I guess what I was trying to say was, you know, we call it the European Championship up the front, and then we've got the Asian, the Japanese Manufacturer Championship down the bottom. And I really wanted to mention Fabio Quartararo, who was the first out of the Japanese Championship, seventh place he brought that Yamaha home. And I feel like that's a really good ride for Fabio.
It's a good ride for Fabio. None of these guys, if you're in the top 10, you know, they're great rides because they're all within. I mean, if I actually have a quick look at Fabio's, how far behind was he? 20 seconds. So he lost under a second a lap overall. 20 seconds for him will be like next month. He'll be disappointed with that hugely. I mean, when you look at it on the sheets, when they do their analysis, he will know where he was losing time. He will know why he lost time. Half the time, of course, we didn't see him on the TV, so we don't know why that was happening. But seventh place at the end of the day, as a headline, Yamaha PR are going to be making the most of it. But when you actually look at the sheets, 20 seconds behind the leader is not really where you need to be over a 25-lap race. So good, but no cigar, I think we can say for the moment. And I'm hoping the sun comes out right now while we're speaking at Portimao. And I hope that the rain that was overnight hasn't washed all the crap back into the track. Because it's always nice to test the day after you've run a Grand Prix on the same track with similar weather conditions, because all the data can then match up. But of course, if it's chucked it down with rain and washed the track out overnight, you're not going to have a similar scenario to work to. So I have to feel sorry for Yamaha if that's the case. I mean, concessions means that they can run their top line riders. You know, they've got more engines, more tyres, more everything available to them for concessions. But this is day one of their private test. Thank you for pointing that out earlier. And basically, it could be wasted. There will be things they will be able to test, but it still won't be a real back-to-back on what happened at the weekend, and they will be disappointed by that. So if you're feeling sorry for Yamaha, you're in good company.
The other honourable mention that I feel like we have to do, because it's Portimao, Portuguese Grand Prix.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Miguel Oliveira bought the Aprilia home in 10th place.
He did. Ninth place, yes. Actually.
Ninth place. And he was hoping for a top 10.
His mate went off.
Of course. But yeah, I know in the pre-event press, he was saying, I just hope for a top 10. That's what I feel like is going to be my strength this weekend. And I feel like overall, Miguel had a reasonable weekend from what we did see. Like you said, we didn't really see past the little front battles as much as we wanted to. But what I did see, it looked like he was riding reasonably comfortably on that Aprilia.
Yeah, I think that the Aprilia is a comfortable motorbike to ride. It certainly looks to seem to suit most of the styles that are on him at the moment. But again, I've said this before as well. When you're at your home Grand Prix, he's got all that home build-up, you know, everything. You know, the Portuguese go mad. And they did a great job. I think the Park Algarve did a great job. We had the lady who did the rendition of the national anthem was brilliant. We had the fast jets fly by. Gotta have fast jets fly by. I'm sorry, every Grand Prix, you can't not have fast jets fly by. Brilliant. So the whole atmosphere was really, really good. And of course, Miguel Oliveira is the hero. I mean, like, he blocks streets. You know, when he's driving in the daytime, they're all waiting for Miguel Oliveira and chanting and screaming and shouting. They really get behind their home hero. Well, that has an adverse pressure. You know, you're trying to play it down. You're saying, you know, top 10 would be brilliant when you know what they're expecting, something more than that. You know, it's always a tricky one as a home racer. I always say it, win or choke. You tend to find that riders fall in either category. They either perform better than they've ever performed in their life, which he has done in Portugal at the Portuguese Grand Prix in the past, or you choke, which he didn't do. He had a good ride, but it won't have been what he really, really wanted.
You could definitely tell. I mean, not the best weekend either for Trackhouse in general, with Raul crashing out of the main Grand Prix, but is that what he's saying? And that pressure and everything, I feel like it's a good step in the direction. He's getting to learn the Aprilia, the 2024 Aprilia, understanding it may be Coda. They can progress that bit further.
And of course, I suppose it's well worth mentioning, and I should have done in the first place, was that the brand new team. It's a new team gelling together. Everyone's understanding each other as well as the motorcycle. It's the first time that lot have landed in Portugal to do a Grand Prix. So, yes, I think on balance, a good weekend for Trackhouse. They had a difficult start in Qatar. And Cota, they're going to be feeling... You've got to say that the Americans on American soil become quite powerful. You know, the whole...
Well, yes.
The whole American thing, isn't it? Is you know, we're going for it. And that will be. and of course...
Oh, yes.
Justin Marks, the NASCAR background, I mean... As you know, I covered quite a lot of NASCAR back in the day. And I mean, I love the whole NASCAR background to it, the history to it and the like. And so a bit of that at COTA is going to go down very well with the fans. It'd be interesting to see if the event is well supported now that we've got an American flag flying out on in the Premier class. Trackhouse, obviously, you know, right down from the livery and management, and where it's based, I hope it really increases the numbers at COTA. We had, how many did we have at Portugal? I wrote it down somewhere. We had, on Sunday, we had 72,000 people at trackside. It's a brilliant part of the world, by the way. If you've never been to Portugal and that part, the Algarve, then, you know, if you fancy golf, sun, sea and racing, then that's where you ought to be. I mean, it's a real quick hop to Portugal anyway from the UK. Sorry, not from where you are, Renita.
Yeah, not from Australia, no.
But it, from a European point of view, it's a good one to go to. 72,000 on Sunday, 174,000 over the weekend. Bearing in mind, and the reason I say it is the commitment of the owners and the promoters of this event has been huge over the years. The amount of money they've spent on that particular, you know, facility has been huge. And it's a bit of payback now, which is always good.
One thing I did really like about the track and watching it on the TV is the undulation, the rolling hills makes those bikes look so fast. I was watching it going, normally, like, I know these bikes are traveling 300 plus kilometers per hour, but this track just makes them look so insane. I loved it. It was incredible to watch.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because I wonder how many people were thinking that as well. When I sat down to watch the Moto3s, my wife came in and one of my daughters came in and we sat down here and watched it together. And I was looking at it and I said to the girls, blimey, they look fast. Even the Moto3s look fast round there. Yeah, the whole thing. has changed so much. I mean, we've had a, you know, we had a Barry Baltus thing that I think TNT, the XBT guys, put out a piece on Barry Baltus, the lovely Belgian lad of running number 7 and named after Barry Sheen. And when they did that, they put out some of the old Grand Prix footage of Sheeny and my era and the like. And bloody hell, them bikes look slow. They look slow compared with Moto 3. It kind of amuses me a little bit. I mean, I would think Moto 3 is the perfect bike for around Portugal, for around the Algarve. But when you get to a MotoGP bike, bloody hell, they must be absolutely a handful at every single inch of the track. I mean, it beggars belief, really, just how much effort has to go into running one of those things around a track like Parc Alga.
And then you see Jack Miller doing that jump over the crest where, what did he travel? Oh, what have we done? 21.2 meters. Yeah. What a MotoGP bike. That's insane.
Yeah. He knows how to do a bunny hop, doesn't he? Oh, he'd be a good trail driver, Jack.
I think he does a lot in Andorra.
He's the super smooth Jack now as well.
He is. He is.
He's not got an ounce of extra weight, even on his face. Jack's took it serious this year. And he had a little bit of tension on the grid as well. We love Jack Miller. I mean, Jack and his parents, I mean, they're an asset to the paddock. And it's just one of them things where you're kind of wishing him to get there. And he's there or thereabouts. I mean, it's just, but like I've said before, it's so bloody tight in MotoGP now. I mean, they're all within thousands of a second of each other. Just that little bit of opportunity. And he might just be riding a little bit tight because he knows there's a lot riding on this. And you only have to tighten up a tiny bit, and that takes away a bit of your performance if you're not able to let it flow quite as naturally as it would do normally. And that makes a difference. Jack will be back, I'm convinced.
Well, he spoke about that when you did your interview, didn't he? He goes, you know, there's the big gaps, the changes, and years ago that would have meant you still got on the podium, but now it means you're at the back of the field. But you could tell that he's really understanding that, and he is taking things, not to say he wasn't serious before, but he's taking things that next level now because everything is on the line with what we're hearing in the rumors and silly season. So I think you're right. I think we're going to see a new Jack Miller as such coming in to the remainder of the season.
Let's give it some context, shall we? We talked about Quartararo being 20 seconds behind the leader a bit earlier on and finishing where he did in
seventh
place. Jack Miller was fifth in the main race. And he was 16 and a half seconds behind. So he won't be happy with that. He was talking about being in the interview you allude to, was talking about 10 seconds behind the leader at the end of a race. Not good enough. You're miles away. So 16 seconds again. When you actually do the analysis on this, which they will all be doing today, there is room for improvement in many, many areas. And we're going to see a lot of that tighten up as the year rolls on.
Definitely. Well, I feel like we've just about covered MotoGP. We spoke a little bit about Moto3, but I feel like we need to have a chat about Moto3 because it was Holgado took the win ahead of Rueda and Ortola, and cracking racing, like you said earlier, that track definitely suits those bikes.
Yeah, I mean, it does. There's no doubt in that. I mean, Before we jump away from MotoGP, being the annoying person I am, sorry, Renita, is that...
It's okay.
We were talking about BMW joining MotoGP, and it wasn't ruled out by one of their top men in an interview last week. And BMW just having taken their first ever World Superbike win in the hands of Toprak Razgatli Oglu at the weekend. It'll be interesting to see whether that makes a difference. Some bloke got quite annoyed with me down in the comments department. We love your comments, good or bad. Please do, although the bad ones you can be a little bit milder on if you don't. But we do appreciate your comments, and we do read your comments, and we don't dismiss anybody's comments because everybody's allowed an opinion, providing it's not abusive in any way, shape or form. Thank you very much. But the point being is that a gentleman was a bit bloody vociferous over me, slightly dismissive over BMW coming to MotoGP. And you've got to wonder then, in that case, if they are in a position where they win or come close to winning World Superbikes during the course of this year, whether they want to step up into MotoGP. My guess is no. I have to say, it's a massive financial commitment, a massive commitment. And it's taken them how long to win a World Superbike race? Put that in context. A massive amount of time and a massive amount of money. And they've hired probably one of the most talented, if not the most talented, riders to pilot their motorcycle. Having said that, Mickey van der Mark was there or thereabouts as well on the other BMW. So it wasn't just a case of Top Rack. They had a good weekend in World Superbikes. So I just wanted to make a comeback just to make sure that geezer that was on the bottom there wasn't thinking I was going to ignore him. I'm not. We read your comments. We value your comments. Like and subscribe and get involved.
Just on that topic for 1 second, I really like that all the headlines have been saying. Top Rack. Top Rack does the Valentino Rossi on Marc Marquez, or was it Marc Marquez or Val? I can't quite remember, but they're comparing the moves at Catalunya, and I'm like, that's pretty cool. I like that. I do like that.
Well, Superbikes is brilliant, but MotoGP is not over and done with yet. I mean, I think that there was all of a sudden all those ridiculous comparisons being made from World Superbikes and MotoGP after what was a boring Qatar for us. World Superbikes is a brilliant series. I love it. Yeah, I really love it. I think they get some things. The paddock show that Michael Hill does is fantastic in the paddock. Paddock's full of people. I mean, you couldn't get that many more people in MotoGP paddocks anyway because there's that many hangers-on that get tickets from places like me. You just wonder how on earth they get the tickets they get. But in World Superbikes, it's pretty much encouraged. And there's a fellow called Michael Hill, a former 125 racer in Britain here. He's a great act, and that's all I can put him down to. If you know, Michael Hill encourages people to do stuff that you would never get to. He actually sung Happy Birthday to me once on his knees on the stage at the British Grand Prix. There you go.
No,
he's prepared
who...
to do anything to make a good time of it in World Superbike. And you could do with a bit more of that, really, in MotoGP. I mean, again, we're still not talking about MotoGP and Moto2 like you want to, but
it's okay.
Sunday morning, I always feel like Sunday mornings at MotoGP, people, what do you think at home? Tell me what you think. Tell us what you think on OMG MotoGP, purely and simply because I just don't like the fact that we get a rider parade on the back of a truck that goes around and everybody can shout and wave and all the rest of it. You can't really see the riders as they go past because they're miles away and their view's blocked and your view's blocked by people standing up and whatever it is. I mean, personally, I think the rider parade thing is kind of, it's done away with Moto3 and Moto2 warm-ups in the morning. I think they should put more races on. I think we should have a morning race. We should have like the Asia Talent Cup like you do, you know, in Sepang and places. They put on other races before the main races of the weekend are going. I just think trackside value for money needs enhancing at MotoGP. That's my line. What does everybody think that's listening?
Yes, guys, let us know if you were to go to a MotoGP event, what is it that you might change or what would you like to see or experience when you're there with the passes and things? Because obviously, like he said, it's tricky to get into the paddock in MotoGP, but with World Superbikes, Australia, when I went, if you bought a three-day pass, you got into the paddock straight away, and it is completely different to MotoGP. It's more relaxed. It's more chilled. So if you've been to a MotoGP event, what are things that you would like to change? Let us know in the comments. But Keith, we've really got to talk about those other classes. We can't just leave them hanging because I need to shout out Aussie Joel Kelso in Moto3 who finished fifth. I was really impressed with that ride. But like I said, Holgado, Rueda and Ortola were your podium place finishes. Good racing, good battles as always in Moto3. What was your takes from the first race of the day?
Kelso, yeah, you're right. Kelso needs a big up, but so does Colin Vaier as well. The Dutchman. I mean, another good ride from them. You never know with Moto3 who the hell is going to get across the line at the end of the day to take the win. It's exciting right the way from the start. And as I said before, they are working their way through programs regarding the new Pirelli tires because it's tricky for them. And they really were missing that first session on Friday. Didn't because it had rained and the track was muddy. Really, it was awful. Even at the end of the weekend, if you went offline, it was a massive dust ball that came up from behind the MotoGP bikes when they came across close to the pit wall. I know it's not the normal racing line, but it's kind of like if you went offline, you were in trouble. So I think Moto3, very difficult start to the weekend for them. And as I say, they're all just getting used to tyres. Moto2, similar with them, probably more so in that, you know, the Moto2 setup, yeah, hasn't really settled down with the new tyres. And and they've got to manage tyres in Moto2, which I don't think they've ever had to do from memory. I don't think you've ever had to do that in the past with the Dunlops. But with these softer construction tyres and the like, yeah, you get a load of grip to start with. But if you've used up your tyre by the end of the race, then you've used up your tyre and you're going to end up slipping backwards. And there's nothing you're going to be able to do about it. So tyre management has come in. It's a concept I've never been that happy about having to manage tyres, but then it's something that you do have to do occasionally. We saw it in Qatar in MotoGP. Michelin's had to manage their tyres. Same with Pirelli's on Moto2 in this situation. Again, I think it's another one to ask, you know, our subscribers to, do you like the fact that tyre management is a thing? Or do you prefer the original Dunlop bowling balls that just kept going, you know, from two laps of the world and hadn't really worn out? Personally, I quite like the way the Pirelli direction is going at the moment. I think when it all settles down, there's going to be lap records broken here, there and everywhere, and it adds an extra dimension to it. But that's my personal feeling to it. Tyre management is a thing, and I prefer a tyre that, you know, is closer to the edge of being destroyed by the end of the race rather than the fact you could bolt it in for next week and do another race on it. Let us know what you think on that one as well. At the end of the day, the fans are the ones that pay. You know, they're the ones at the end of the day the show is for. Are we making, do you think this is a good thing? Bit of tyre management added in there.
Yeah, let us know in the comments, guys. But we need to talk about your podium places in Moto2. Aaron Canet took his first ever Moto2 win. Finally took a Moto2 win.
Well, tear in the eyes, wasn't it, from a bloke that looked brutal. You've got to say, after, 70 Grand Prix, finally he gets on the top step. I mean, he's deserved it. I think 15 times he's been runner-up. Yeah, 15 times and not won a race when he clearly had the performance to be able to do that. But will that be the point where now he is a complete believer? I think yes. I mean, Canet has been there or thereabouts for years now. Maybe this win in Portugal will get him past whatever it is, that barrier, that psychological barrier, that mechanical barrier, that setup barrier, whatever it is that's just held him back that little bit. Luck barrier, which is the one I believe it is. I mean, he'd have won races ages ago if he'd had a bit more luck. But still, the man of the meeting for me was Fermín Aldeguer again. You know, jump start, double long lap penalty. You know, and again, I made my little notes. we've already had a spectacular from the likes of Acosta. Let's see what Aldeguer got in my noting here. So the 18-year-old, double long lap, for that jump start. And it was hardly a jump start. It's quite harsh, I've got to say, to get a double long lap. But he went from second place in the race when he took his first long lap in lap 5 to 11th place. He took his second one on lap 7 and he went from 10th to 13th, 5.2 seconds behind the leader at that point. And he came through brilliantly again to take 4th place. You've got to say, I know he's won from pit road in the past before, but in that class, in that company, and with that tyre situation in mind, you burn a tyre up when you're trying to force your way through from so far back. You're using up tyre all the time, more and more and more. And by the time you get to the end of the race, it's slithering all over the place. So 4th place, really, what a damage limitation job from Aldeguer. And you can think that Ducati would have been thinking to themselves, that's our boy, putting everyone under pressure next year, MotoGP.
I was just thinking that if people weren't necessarily aware or had him on their radar, they're going to now after that ride, because clearly people are going to understand why he is making that step up to MotoGP. But just to finish off the podium, we had Joe Roberts in second for the American Racing Team and Manuel Gonzalez in third. So overall, it was a decent weekend for Moto2 riders, but not for our boy Jake Dixon. Unfortunately, pulling out of the weekend after Friday's practice, I think still recovering from that nasty crash that happened in Qatar. So hopefully Jake's going to heal up well and will be ready to get back on that bike in Coda in a few weeks' time.
Well, he was fast. He was fast on Friday. I mean, I can't remember what the qualifying was, but the time was. I think he was seventh quickest or something. But he was there.
I think he was seventh.
So Jake was on. You know, he was there or thereabouts, but you could tell in his eyes that he's still hurting. He's not quite right. So the decision made by him, his team, you know, Sarah, his wife, was an absolute perfect decision. I mean, he's got to go out and win races. He's not going to do that if he's half damaged. And a race of that quality on a racetrack like that length over, you know, uphill, downhill, as I've said before, is a tough old race, and it would have been hard graft for him. So Jake made the right decision. Cota next. We'll see where that gets him. Glad he didn't go out on Saturday and try again. I think that decision was made on the Friday night. He didn't look happy when he announced it.
Yeah.
He is a racer, but it's the right decision. And we wish him well. Wish him back well.
We do. But yes, as we've said multiple times, the next race is at the Circuit of the Americas in 3 weeks' time. Keith, before we go, do you have any final bits of news for us this week?
I've just been looking across at my notes at the minute. I mean, it was all about the test today. I was hoping that I was looking at my phone a minute ago just to see if anything had come up, but it's not at the minute. I hope that Yamaha have something to play with this today that gets them further forward. Yamaha at the moment, Honda and Yamaha are vying. They're down in that category D area of concessions. They've got opportunities to try different aero, different engine configurations. They can use their main riders, and they've got more tyres to be able to test with as well. They've got an extra engine to test with. So there are lots of opportunities for Yamaha and Honda to build on those concessions, and I hope they are able to. It comes down to engineering at the end of the day. We are still waiting for confirmation. It will be in the next few weeks as to the 850cc configuration, new engines that we're going to get in 2027. But the reason why we're going to hear about that fairly soon is because of the lead-in time that it takes from an engineering perspective to put that through test sessions and so on and so forth, to get the thing up and running, to get the thing designed correctly. I mean, there was still, as far as I was aware, trying to come to agreement on bore and stroke and the like, the width of the bore of the piston and the length of the stroke the piston travels. You know, those are important aspects to whether this 850 is going to be a success or not. You know, my worry is that's kind of, yeah, I think we've got to go to a lower CC, because at the end of the day, cubic capacity does make a massive difference in grunt and the like. So we need to bring that back a little bit, but it needs to be in conjunction with junking the bloody ride height adjusters and so on and so forth. They've got to go. Maybe tightening up the restrictions regarding aero and development of aero, because we are getting to, you know, it's a rabbit hole, and we are getting to a situation we already know. Ground effect. Who'd have thought you could get ground effect on a motorbike? But now we're talking about ground effect, you know, aero on motorbikes, where when you're cranked into a corner and the side of the bike is laid close to the tarmac, the ground effect is sucking the bike in, is giving it some weight. Instead of trying to skitter out from underneath you to the outside of your line, it's sucking you down towards the track. Now, that is amazing that we're talking about ground effect, you know, on a motorcycle. It's never going to be of any use anywhere other than on a racing motorcycle, because you're never traveling at a velocity, or rarely you're traveling at a velocity on a road that is going to make that of any use. I mean, I can't imagine what the average corner speed on a British road is. That's assuming that you don't fall down one of our bloody ridiculous potholes that we've got all over the country now. But the point being, you know, ground effect, you're more likely going to need motocross tyres on road bikes over here before long if the councils don't get a bit of a grip on it. I don't know what it's like in Australia at the moment, but over here we are. I spend more time looking at the floor than I do in front of me. dodging holes in the road.
But look, on the point of aero, you're not the only one who agrees that it doesn't need to be there. I read an article with Marc Marquez saying the same thing. He goes, I'm welcoming this new change in 27. I don't think we need the aero. Let's reduce it. Let's reduce the engine size. We don't need to be traveling as fast on the TV. It looks the same. So why do we have this? Why is it going in that direction? So if he's voicing it, I'm sure there's other riders that are voicing the same things. I think we're going to see a big change.
Well, we can go back to Bradley Smith. I remember Bradley Smith, the British rider that mentioned, I think it was in Phillip Island, when the aero was having such an effect on, not particularly so much on the bike that you were riding, but on every bike around you. Everybody's getting buffeted and moved around everywhere, getting sucked into the aero of the machinery around you. And all of that has not got to be good. And of course, that increases with the fact that you're doing 225 mile an hour now at some of these racetracks, faster than just about anything else on a closed circuit. So you imagine the amount of wind that you are producing around you or producing personally, who knows at that speed. It's kind of one of those situations where it is quite tricky. And so aero does need reeling in. There's no doubt about that. Sorry for it.
But guys, on aero and the rule changes and the engine capacity and everything like that, we will keep you updated as much as we can with when those new rulings come out. But for now, I feel like that is the end of our Portimao review. Keith, as always, thank you so much for chatting with me. And guys, please feel free to get in touch with us. We are at OMG MotoGP on all the social media channels, or you're welcome to email us a question, omgmotogp@gmail.com. Don't forget, we have Patreon as well. You can check that out. There's some goodies on there if you want to like and subscribe with that. But for now, thank you so much for listening, guys, and we will see you soon.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.